Well, thank you for coming out on a rainy morning. And welcome to CSIS, the Center for Strategic and International Studies. For the last few years, we've been looking at how the global economy is changing, what the implications are for national policies. The latest phase of this project is looking at intellectual property and how it affects development and innovation. And we're very pleased today to have a spectacular panel to talk about the implications of this and some of the ideas and programs and policies you can find in other important economic countries around the world. My name is Jim Lewis. I'm the director of the Technology and Public Policy Program here at CSIS. What we're going to do today is have our panelists speak. Each of them will speak for about 15 minutes. If I could ask you to hold your questions until the end of each of their remarks, we have plenty of time for questions. And then we'll take questions from the floor. Moderating the panel will be Robert Shapiro, who's had an exceptionally distinguished career. He's the founding partner and managing director of Sonicon, an economic consulting firm. And before that, he was the Undersecretary of Commerce for Economic Affairs, so a perfect background for this. He also was one of the founders of the Progressive Policy Institute, one of our competitors here in Think Tank Land, and the Progressive Foundation, and also an economic advisor to several presidential campaigns. So we're very pleased to have him moderate, and he'll begin the session. He'll be followed by Anoop Mishra, who's the economic minister from the Embassy of India. His responsibilities include U.S.-Indian economic relations. I do need more coffee, as well as facilitating U.S. investments in India. And he's worked for the Indian government for many years within the Ministry of Finance. So, again, particularly useful expertise. Our third panelist will be Carlos Alfredo Lazeri Teixeira, who is the Minister Counselor for Economic Affairs at the Embassy of Brazil, very active in these issues. Finally, we'll have Young Guoa, who is the Counselor for Intellectual Property at the Embassy of the People's Republic of China. He's worked extensively on IP issues within the WTO in amending Chinese laws. He is a lawyer, and he wrote his doctorate in law on Section 301 of the U.S. trade law, so he's perfect in some ways for this discussion. What I'll do is sit at the end. When we're finished with the panelists, we'll go to questions. If I could ask you to remember to identify yourself when you ask your question, that would be very helpful for all of us. And with that, let me turn it over to Dr. Shapiro.
I'm pleased to join the panel alongside the representatives of China and India, having as moderator Mr. Robert Shapiro, who gave us a very insightful opening remarks today. I would like also to acknowledge and present to you Mr. Arlo Moisa, who works at the embassy. Please, Mr. Moisa, he's been dealing with intellectual property subjects at the embassy for the last 3 years. So if you have any difficult questions, just... I also commend CISIS for promoting an event not centered on the issue of enforcement of intellectual property rights. In an email message sent last week to myself and the other speakers in this panel, our host stated the hope that I quote, we can make this discussion a little different from the usual Washington focus on how people should do more to fight piracy and or other enforcement issues. Indeed, Brazil has been confronted for the last several years with this focus, which often misses the larger picture related to intellectual property. This is not to say that the issue of piracy is a minor one. The Brazilian government has been making a great effort to combat copyright piracy, whose results have been recognized by both the U.S. government and industry. We appreciate this recognition and look forward to that being translated in the next Special 301 report to be released by the end of the current month. Having said that, let me move on to the main topic of our discussion today. The relation between IP and economic development cannot be seen outside the framework of the international regime of intellectual property as defined in the TRIPS Agreement. Since TRIPS was signed, the international debate regarding IP has featured two basic positions. The first one favors the expansion in international harmonization of intellectual property rights beyond the standards established in TRIPS. This is the so-called TRIPS Plus agenda. In this view, the strengthening of IPR is an end in itself, which automatically would lead to technological, economic, and social development in the countries which adopt more stringent norms in this matter. The second concept acknowledges the difficulties in the implementation of TRIPS, as well as the existence of imperfections in the current functioning of the intellectual property system, which would tend to restrict allegedly automatic effects of inducing technological, economic, and social developments. In this view, any exercise with the aim of expanding IPRs should be preceded by a careful evaluation and condition to the public interest. Otherwise, the balance of rights and obligations, which is mentioned in the Article 7 of TRIPS as one of the objectives of the agreement, could be compromised. At this point, let me emphasize that Brazil's IPR legal framework is TRIPS Plus in a number of fields, not to mention the fact that Brazil opted not to take advantage of the full transition periods allowable under the TRIPS agreement. Brazil fully complies with its international obligations regarding IPRs. At the same time, a growing concern that the IP system does not adequately contemplate the development dimension has led to the proposal for the establishment of a development agenda for the World Intellectual Property Organization. The agenda presented at 2004 WIPO's General Assembly is currently under discussion in the organization. It has received more than 100 concrete proposals by a number of member states, including the U.S. and the United Kingdom. Let me remind you that the most important international organizations, such as the UN and the WTO, have already fully incorporated the dimension of development in their agenda. In the Brazilian institutional framework, our National Institute of Industrial Property, INPI, has defined as strategic actions A, streamlining trademarks and patents concessions, proper dissemination of a so-called intellectual property culture, promotion of the utilization of the technological information of the patents, and outreach program to improve communications with society, meaning a proactive approach from the INPI towards a small business, toward the private sector, taking in consideration that Brazilians have a natural entrepreneurship, and Brazilian business community is a very active one. The INPI is doing that in close coordination with all the other organizations that are part of our national system of innovation that was created by a recent innovation law that is discussed in the Brazilian Crown Congress since 2002, and in 2005 has been issued. These institutions are namely the Brazilian National Social and Economic Development Bank, the FINEP, which is the Brazilian Agency for Financial Special Projects, SEBRAE, which is the national institution that deals with the small, micro and small companies, along with many others in the state level, because Brazil has 27 states, and in the private sector. INPI, needless to say, is teaming up with a number of universities in Brazil. This interaction between institutions targets the knowledge creation, diffusion of this knowledge created, and application, fully following the OECD recommendations. In what refers to its own capacity, INPI is now in the process of substantially expanding the number of employees, a measure that will help to address the backlog in patent application, which we recognize. For this year, the Institute estimates that the examination process of 25,000 patent applications will be completed, increasing to 30,000 in 2008 and 40,000 in 2009. Between 2000 and 2004, as a comparison, the average was 17,000 decisions on patent applications, meaning that we'll try to double it by in two years' time. INPI budget for 2007 is estimated in 183 million reals, which approximately $89 million, which in Brazilian terms is a lot of money, roughly twice as much the figure of 2003, meaning 100% increase in budget. The word of order for INPI is transparency. And what we have in mind is that this is a dynamic situation, meaning that we still have a long way to go, but we are doing our best with our budget constraints to streamline all the process related to patents and trademarks in Brazil. INPI modernization is part of a wider quest to reform and modernize the Brazilian state as an essential step towards the strengthening of our democracy. It goes along with other important reforms, tax reforms, social security reforms, and more closely to these patent and trademarks, the judiciary reforms. We have adopted in Brazil the binding clause, which will streamline and make more quick all the judiciary and the actions in the judiciary, with a view to an even better climate for business and investment. We are aware that these are core elements of our overall competitiveness. The opening of the Brazilian economy, the action within Mercosul, the internationalization of Brazilian companies, all these elements bring an element of strengthening our culture for intellectual property in Brazil. INPI and U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, USPTO, have a long history of cooperation, now reinforced by the newly established commercial bilateral dialogue between the Department of Commerce and our Ministry of Development, Industry, and Foreign Trade. Besides that, we've been working together with American entities in the JCM, which is the Science and Technology Commission, that has been put in place last year in July here in an event that was held at the Academy of Sciences here in Washington. It is important to stress our credentials in this area when presenting the Brazilian view on the racial relationship between IP and development. Another point that I would like to comment on regards biopiracy. It is a new issue that, in our view, requires closer consideration. In hundreds of cases, either trademarks or patents are being granted over items of the Brazilian biodiversity or traditional knowledge of indigenous people. In June 2006, it was presented at the WTO a proposal for an amendment to the TRIPS agreement establishing a requirement in patent applications for the disclosure of origin of biological resources and or associated traditional knowledge. Brazil and a vast number of developing countries support this proposal and believe that such an amendment is an essential element of the development outcome that is expected from the Doha development round. This all relates to our national goal of advancing towards a more sustained development, especially in the interior of Brazil, and not only in the Amazon region. Brazil has long been defending the balance of rights and obligations that is a cornerstone of the international intellectual property system. In our view, and I quote from the joint communique issued on the occasion of the visit by President Bush to Brazil in November 2005, the protection and enforcement of intellectual property rights should contribute to the promotion of technological innovation and to the transfer of dissemination of technology and to a balance of rights and obligations, to the mutual advantage of producers and users of technological knowledge and in a manner conducive to social and economic welfare. Many thanks again for the invitation. Thank you.
Good morning. When I was invited by the CSISS to speak to this conference, I didn't expect that there would be such a big audience. And actually, before this conference, I had during the coffee period, I had a brief talk with some of my friends here, and I was told that if this event happened 5 years ago in Washington, D.C., entitled like Intellectual Property Rights Implications for Economic Development, the audience would be about 12 people in a small room, conference room. So I didn't know what happened in the last 5 years since I've been here only for 1 year. You know, here in the United States, it seems that a lot of people are speaking, talking about intellectual property rights and the attention on the intellectual property rights are escalated everywhere around the world. But what I did understand was that this kind of escalation, special attention on intellectual property rights, created my job. So I'm the first intellectual property rights attaché, IP attaché here in the Chinese embassy. I've been here for 15 months to help U.S. business here. Of course, this is not the forum for me to talk about my work, my job to report to you what I do every day. But what I'm going to talk about is on the intellectual rights in a broader perspective, maybe in the context of innovation and economic development. I'm not expert on the economics, policy, politics, but I can share with you some of my observations of the developments in China in the past years. Before I give you the detailed introduction of my papers, I would like to have a very brief introduction to the development in China in the past years for intellectual property rights protection. As you know, China has a history of 5,000 years. Also, as India is also a long country of long history. But the intellectual rights protection system is only 25 years. So 25 years versus 5,000 years. This is not a very balanced comparison. So it's only 25 years ago that China had its first patent law. It's only 15 years ago, that is the early 1990s, China has its first copyright law. So this is when we talk about intellectual property rights, it's a very, very recent progress, very recent topic in China. But right now, when you go to China, you will see, you're talking to many people, when we have a similar conference or seminar entitled Intellectual Property Rights Implementations for Economic Development, we would also attract maybe 400 people, 500 people, because China has a very, very big population. More people will come to this conference. So people are really more and more interested in this. So what I conclude from this, my observation for the past years, past 25 years or 15 years of China's development on intellectual rights was that two points. First is we see a tremendous progress. No matter the laws, regulations, or the enforcement, we see a lot of reports, progress reports on China's progress in the past years on the enforcement. So, first point. Second point is that there are still many serious problems, very serious problems. That's why the government and all the business people in China are increasingly paying more and more attention. That attention was also escalated in past years in China, within China, to protect intellectual rights. Means that although we increased the enforcement and legislation in the past years, but the problem is still very serious. That's why we see that right now there are still many problems in China in the intellectual property rights. I just give you some of my evidences on the attention or the progress in the very recent years on the intellectual property rights protection in China. I have four documents in front of me. Just to give you some quotations from this document. The first one was a document issued by the State Council in China. That was in the, let me look at it, 2006, January 26th. That is the State Council's decision on promote innovation to strengthening the capacity of self-innovation. So 1 year ago, the State Council issued this decision. Within this decision, we find a very, very important. This is this kind of decision. If I can say describe this in the English context, maybe this is kind of strategic plan. In the next 20 years, the Chinese government, what would the Chinese government do to promote technology development and increase the capability of self-innovation? So this is kind of strategic plan. And in this strategic plan, we see a sentence here. One of the objectives in the next 20 years would be to create a rule of law environment for intellectual property rights protection, to build a complete legal system to combat the counterfeiting and piracy and other intellectual property rights infringement activities, so that the government could say create a environment for the creation and the transfer of intellectual property rights. So this is only one sentence here, but we see the relationship between the innovation and intellectual property protection. So means that here means that the if you want to, in the next 20 years, if you want to have a increase your the capacity of self innovation, you need to increase the intellectual rights protection in two ways. First, to have a complete legal system. Second, to combat piracy and counterfeiting and other intellectual rights infringement activities. That's my understanding for this sentence. This is a very broad, very high-level strategic plan in China issued by the State Council in for the next 20 years. To implement this strategic plan, I also have some other documents in front of me. The first one is the most recently released report. Actually, yesterday morning, this report was released. That is called the 2007 Action Plan for Intellectual Property Rights. The 2007 Action Plan for Protection of Intellectual Property Rights. This is a government document issued by the State Council's Intellectual Property Rights Protection Office. That secretary is in the Ministry of Commerce, where I came from, Ministry of Commerce. So this is this is a very big document. This is how many pages in Chinese? I have 20 pages in Chinese. So this is an action plan for intellectual property rights protection only for this year. So I see 10 items under this action plan. First is legislative plan. Second is enforcement plan. Next is judicial protection. Next, we call it mechanism building. Next, public awareness. The sixth, training. Seventh, international cooperation. International cooperation. Eighth, promote the protection of IP by the business. The ninth, to provide service assistance to the right holders. The last one is to have some researches on the specific topics. So you see a very comprehensive one. This is the second action plan by the Chinese central government on the intellectual property rights protection. This is called action plan. The first one was the 2006 action plan. So this is the second. You see quite a few very comprehensive way to address the problem, to increase the protection of intellectual property rights in China. What I understood this action plan was that this is a compilation of the action plans by different, about 12 agencies, 12 central government agencies. They each have their own action plans. So this State Council's IP office to collect them, so coordinate all the activities. So we have this action plan. Means that all these activities will be outlined in this plan would be accomplished by the end of this year. So this is not a kind of strategic plan. This is a real detailed plans. This is one of the documents I'm reading to you. The second document is if I can say also is this is also to implement the State Council's strategic plan for innovation and economic development. Translate this literally, this is kind of an opinion issued by the Chinese Supreme Court. The title is that the opinion on how to increase the strengthen the intellectual property rights work in the judicial system to provide a kind of a judicial mechanism for self-innovation society. You know, this is kind of a slogan in China. We will build a self-innovation society in the next 20 years, something like that. So this is kind of a implementation plan on the strategic plan by the Supreme Court. So in this, this is also a very huge document. I didn't print it out with me. You will see that how the Supreme Court will increase the training for the IP judges, how the court will establish the specific IP tribunals, how could the judgments or rulings by the court will be publicized in a website. So you see everything here. And so increased efforts in the judicial system on protection of IP. This is another very, very important document. The next and the last one is actually, this is not a document by the Chinese government. This is just a press release by a conference in China. Early last week, there is a Global Forum on Intellectual Property Rights Protection and Innovation in China, hosted by China Council for the Promotion of International Trade, or CITEC. CITEC is a kind of a China Chamber of Commerce, China Chamber of Commerce. So they hosted a global forum. I just want to touch upon the titles of these different sections so that you could understand what the business people and the government people in China are thinking about, are talking about in the context of international IP production, because this is a global one. We invited the participants from 11 countries, so very big, 2 days conference in China, very big one. Some titles. The first one is called Global Trends in Protection of Intellectual Property Rights. So we invited quite a few important figures, like the director to the United States Patent and Trademark Office, John Dudas, was addressing this conference. The second one is the key components of an innovative society. So people from different countries were talking about this. What are the key components of an innovative? When you talk about innovation, innovative, build an innovative society, what are the key components? Next one is developing a competitive environment for intellectual property rights and innovation. So we see here, see something corresponding to the State Council's strategic plan. So how to create an environment. In the panel's discussion, we see corporate strategies for branding and innovation through use of IP. So good people talk, business people talk about this. So a lot of CEOs, like a lot of CEOs talk about their perspectives from the business context. Another panel's title is Increasing Public Awareness of IP. So we see this in the China's 2006 action plan, so increase the public awareness. And next one is maybe the most important one, coordinating intellectual property rights enforcement. So enforcement is a kind of topic right now. And next one is the role for government in the fostering innovation. So I'm from the Chinese government. So we always look at the IP problem from a government's perspective, and try to increase the protection, enforcement, environment, judicial system, something like this. So this is some of the topics here. Some people talk about this. And the last few topics are the sustaining innovation in the global economy. Oh, this is a very important topic. So when you talk about intellectual property rights, we do not talk about in Brazil, in India. This is a global problem. A lot of counterfeited goods, say, were imported and exported across the border. So how to control that globally? This is a cooperation in a global area. Of course, people are also talking about the university and private sector cooperation in innovation. very important topic. And emerging issues in intellectual property rights and enforcement, most recent issues. And the role of intergovernmental organizations in innovation and IP protection. The role of associations in innovation and IP protection. So this event only happened last week, early last week. From this agenda, maybe you could see what people right now in China, from the government, from the business, are thinking about right now to protect the IP. If I can make a very brief conclusion to my speak, I just see. Although at the very beginning I said I didn't really understand why the intellectual property issue becomes a hot topic in the past 5 years here in the United States. You are the person to tell me about this, the reason why. But I really understand a little bit about China's development. So I did see huge development in the past years, especially in the recent 2 years maybe, not since I came here, but it's last 2 years maybe, from the attention from the government, from the private sector. So right now, I myself is pretty confident, although we have a lot of problems, but we did see a lot of progress every day. So we are so confident that maybe we can, in the near future, I don't know how near, in the near future, there China will not be on the priority watch list on the special 301 report. Thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you very much. I think that we have heard a very clear articulation of different approaches to the basic issues inherent in intellectual property, and it tells us that the interest is not going to dissipate. It's only going to intensify, I think, over coming years. And let me say, I think that this really is an issue in which the United States has a unique role, because of all the advanced countries in the world, the United States is by far the most globalized, its economy. Percentage of U.S. FDI, which is in developing nations today, is between 28% and 30% of the stock of our global FDI. In Europe, it's 6% to 8%. Europe trades and invests almost exclusively with itself and the United States. The United States is, of the large advanced economies, the most fully globalized. And so this is really a dialogue which is, in certain fundamental ways, with respect to the interests of the developing world and the interests of the United States, a dialogue between the United States and many other countries. Now why don't we open it to questions from the audience. If you could state your name and where you're from, and then we'll get a dialogue going here. Yes.
My question is for the gentleman from China, Ni Hao. Thank you. Did you hear that all right, or should I repeat it?
I think we heard it.
Okay. In the Western tradition, much of the enforcement of intellectual property rights has been on the civil side. That is, the suits have been initiated by private parties rather than by public prosecutors. And I'm wondering if the development of a judicial system in China for hearing intellectual property cases, if the emphasis will be on allowing more private enforcement, or if the idea is that most of the enforcement will be initiated by the public prosecutor.
Thank you for your question. There is a recent report issued by the Supreme Court. That is a conclusion. That is a summary of their cases in the past 1 year, in 2006. I cannot remember the exact figure. Tremendous cases on intellectual rights were heard in China. And last year, in 2006, we have some very publicized cases issued by the U.S. Companies, like the Starbucks case. Starbucks brought a case against the Shanghai cafeteria and the Qingdao cafeteria, and they both won the case by the Chinese court. Another case is the Pfizer case. Pfizer filed a case against the State Intellectual Property Office and are not granting their patent for a certain product. And finally, they won the case. So you hear a lot of cases. That case, the total number of the case, if you be interested in that, I can send you. By the way, my email address is ipadache@yahoo.com. If you are interested in the figures, I can send you that number to you immediately. So my understanding was that the judicial system is there. There are specialized intellectual property rights tribunal within the courts across China. A lot of cases were heard, but at the same time, there is something very special in China. That is what they call the administrative protection. Means that the patent office, trademark office, and copyright office, they also have the legal mandate authority to impose fines, seizures, and closures of the factories. You know, this is a very unique. I don't know what is the system in Brazil and India, but not here in the United States. I don't think the USPTO, U.S. Patent Trademark Office, can send people to the street to impose fines and close the shops. No, but in China, this is kind of administrative protection. We did see very, very many cases from this channel, administrative protection. Many cases. If I can say, one side is a judicial channel, another is administrative channel. We see more cases, more and more, many times more cases from this side. And I fully believe this is pretty necessary in the present system. So I would not say that China would use this kind of administrative protection because of this of the problem in the judicial system. I didn't see this. I didn't see much criticism from this perspective. Am I answering the question? Yeah.
Next. Yes. Yes. She's just bringing the microphone.
Thanks. I'm a consultant, also investor. I buy patents, also write patents. And I've been in IP business for about 16, 17 years. And I have a question from Anoop. You said that if for the patent, you don't want a monopoly. So basically, do you infer that in India, you want to have like a compulsory license that if somebody, you get a patent, but if somebody gets a patent and then somebody copies it, you just have to pay the compulsory license, but you cannot, just exclude others from practicing.
No, I didn't say that. I was raising only a fundamental issue for consideration. I did not say that India talks about compulsory licenses. All that I was saying was that on an economic plane, the intellectual property rights should give legal rights, but they should not create monopolies, and it should permit economic competition in terms of permitting other products which would fall in the same category but not exactly the same. So my suggestion was not that we would give compulsory licenses. My suggestion, my question was that the regime, the patent, the intellectual property regime should not be such that it stops any economic competition, and it does not create a total monopoly. I was not suggesting that we have compulsory licensing. No. I mean, it would have relevance in terms of for pharmaceuticals, something like what is called a Me Too drug. Now, the issue is that your regime, intellectual property regime, should be such that it should permit Me Too drugs to come in, and rather than create a situation where similar competitive products are excluded from the market. So I think I was not describing a condition in India, only raising an issue that I think the full benefits of intellectual property right protection to the society would accrue when it also permits and encourages economic competition.
If I can comment on that, just this goes to really one of the basic principles of modern patent regimes, which is the trade-off between the exclusive right and the publicity. That is, when you file a patent, you have to let the world know what it is you've done, and so that the world can, so that others can use that information and perhaps come up with something that's a stage more advanced or does something slightly different. And so it's always a trade-off, I think, between monopoly and competition, recognizing that the patent itself, within however it is defined, will create a temporary monopoly right, but create the conditions for competition by other innovators, not by a copycat, but by other innovators, which can limit the scope of that monopoly over time. It's a deep trade-off. It's a trade-off that goes deep to the principles of the development of intellectual property rights. Yes.
Good morning. Gabriel Key with Dewey Valentine. I'm a trade specialist there. I think this is a great segue into my question, which is that we have a great panel of representatives from the, I guess you could say, the upper crust of the developing countries. All three countries here are on the verge of emerging into a very, very strong economic powerhouses. And as a result, you have a situation where foreign technology, foreign IP that's coming in could potentially have such a superior but temporary advantage over IP in the domestic country that there might be the situation where that technology could be considered to be monopolistic because it's that little bit extra ahead. So, you know, how do you propose that you find that balance between competitive policy or anti-competitive policies and strong IP rights? You know, for example, in France right now throughout the EU, Microsoft keeps finding itself in court because it's being considered to be a monopoly because of their operating system and whatnot. But there really isn't much of a competitor against Microsoft in those markets. So how do you propose that those needs will be balanced out so that there can be development, but at the same time, competitors from, you know, the United States can operate and enforce their patents?
Who is that? Who are you directing it to?
Any of the members of the panel.
Well, in the case of Brazil, we can live with this principle. You see, we've been we have our problems, we have these bureaucracy problems, but we have been living comfortably with this temporary monopoly that represents the coming in of new knowledge, new technology. So this is not an issue. This is not a problem for Brazil for the moment. Of course, Brazilian companies going abroad, as we have now, perhaps we will have to rediscuss this thing. But for the moment, the principle that were stated back in the 19th century that are still very, a consensus in Brazil.
Mm-hmm. May I just add to that? There have been studies and on what is the average time taken for a substitute innovation to come to the market. And it has come with very interesting conclusions in the sense that over, I think, every 20 years, that time taken is falling by about a year or so. And the study concluded that in the period 1980 to 2000, that time, or average time, had come down to about 3.4 years. Now, I think this is very much in line with what Robert said, that there would be a temporary monopoly, but I think we should not create a situation where a substitute innovation or a competitive innovation is excluded from the market. And I think that is what would be the balance, and I think that is a balance which has to be found. But we do recognize that if you are recognizing intellectual property and conferring a right, it would create a temporary monopoly. That's one dimension. The other dimension, of course, is, which I did not mention, would be the antitrust issues which would come with it. And I think that would basically be, that goes into partly into the pricing domain and price, antitrust or cartelization issues. So I think probably intellectual property regimes will also have to take that into account and handle those issues.
There are also very special circumstances in certain markets, certain technological markets. You mentioned Microsoft. There are some markets that have what economists call network effects, in which it's there are significant barriers to competition built into the market because, and Windows is certainly an example, because if somebody comes up with a better operating system, organizations are heavily invested in the use of Windows because everybody else is using Windows. And they communicate with everyone else. And so we have special rules. We're developing special rules for markets with these kinds of network effects. But it's a Microsoft has had these issues with the United States Justice Department as well as the EU. We don't need to get into the Microsoft issue itself, but we do have to develop particular ways of approaching intellectual property rights in markets with network effects and not necessarily apply those rules to markets in which there are not network effects and in which, when someone comes up with a new pharmaceutical, there's no cost to moving from one pharmaceutical to another. Different economic issues. Yes.
Hi, Peter Harder with Intellectual Ventures. I'm a lobbyist here in Washington, D.C., working on patent reform legislation. One of my executives, Edward Jung, our CTO and co-founder, was in Beijing last week and really enjoyed the conference referenced earlier. And to make a personal observation, Edward, while he was born in upstate New York, his parents from Korea, first patents was actually in Japan at age 14. So he's a bit of an underachiever, I guess. anyway, in patent reform legislation and getting some of the comments on the panel, how can the U.S. improve its patent regime? And first to file, first to invent is one of those issues that's been around for, I think, 40 years, 50 years. You go back to some reports, the Johnson Commission, 1966. Not the issue I lobby on. Important issue, but I'm not the expert in that. But how can the U.S. learn from the experience of other countries? Oftentimes, you talk to someone, say, in the cell phone business. We have a great phone network in this country, but other countries don't have the infrastructure of copper wire. They just leapfrogged to advance mobile communications. So you see new innovations in mobile phones overseas before you see them here in the U.S. because we have a legacy infrastructure that we're solid with, arguably. So with that context, my question to the panel is, I've observed that in China, Japan, Taiwan, Korea, that they've looked at one of these controversial issues in U.S. patent reform called post-grant opposition, where an infringer or competitor can take a granted patent back to the PTO and attack it through various proceedings. And there are two ways to do it currently. You can also attack it in court, obviously. So on top of all that, they want two new windows of opposition, loosely called the second window of post-grant opposition. But in these countries, China, India, and Japan, they tried post-grant opposition. And I've read reports recently that they tried and felt that they concluded that we have to get rid of this because it's just patent owner harassment. And they replaced it with something called post-issuance revocation. And in Europe, they have a very active post-grant opposition activity. And there was an article in Managing Intellectual Property in March of this year saying that post-grant opposition has become a, quote, business tool to attack the patent owner, typically small businesses, universities, inventors, to narrow the claims in their patents, to invalidate the patents, and to force them to license the patent at a lower rate than the free market would otherwise bear. So I'm curious if any of the panelists are in the weeds like I am on post-grant opposition. Sure, it's a very exciting topic once you read 1,000 pages of legal documents. It's about patent quality, getting rid of junk patents, obviously, so only strong patents are out there, the real innovative ones. Kind of the flip side of Mr. Mishra's comments about pre-grant opposition proceedings in India. So apologize for the length of it. Hopefully some comments, please.
I can only say that India has done both. We have both pre-grant and post-grant. So,
right.
I mean, I think... probably, I think it is. I understand the implications that you've outlined, but I think the flip side is the quality of the patent and also see that we don't have a number of patents which are not patentable or replicable or things like that. So I think both pre-grant, we think pre-grant does permit a degree of due diligence on part of the patent office, which would be desirable. But yes, I mean, it does become, these provisions are always open to full use or abuse by competitors. I mean, we do recognize that. But I think... we can't think of a better alternative. I mean, probably doing away with it would... publicity alone, full publication alone, probably would not be a full substitute for a pre-grant or a post-grant opposition. So I think probably it might be the best fit, as it were.
Anyone else?
Suddenly, a lot of interest. Yes.
Hi, my name is Glenn Katapish. I'm a volunteer with the nonprofit local, the Inventors of Network of the Capital Area, and I also volunteer with the Patent Information Users Group, which is a corporation. So, and I also do consulting on patent research and patent search engines. So my question kind of follows patent quality. I was just wondering what type of cooperation between the different patent offices is happening to improve patent quality, perhaps the patent time turnaround, and using technology or process. Thank you.
Thank you.
As in the case of Brazil, as I mentioned, we've been doing our National Institute of Patent Industrial Property, been doing a lot of benchmarking. Our INPI, as we call it in Portuguese, is, as I mentioned, has a close relation with US PTO with the European counterparts, and so we are reaching out. We have a special agenda with South American countries, with Mercosur countries. We've been discussing a large array of themes, including one of the most important is, of course, patent quality. So meaning that we have been doing a lot of capacitation, the INPI. Our personnel at INPI has been now 70% of the personnel in our NPI, and INPI has been there for less than 3 years now, meaning that this all new group of people with open-minded, cultural of reaching out to other entities that are more advanced. So what we are doing is working with transparency and bringing every processes that have proved successful. So this is in our agenda to do that. Thank you.
I was at the dialogue between the Chinese director, Chinese patent office director, and U.S. PTO's director, John Dudas, last year. They signed an agreement on cooperation between the two departments. In that cooperation program, they are training, they are exchange of information, a lot of other issues. But what they were also talking about was the very, very substantial issue, that is getting access to the U.S. PTO's patent data by the Chinese patent office. Right now, it's still not accessible by the Chinese patent office. That's the recent development I got to know. Yeah.
I would only add that I think the patent cooperation treaty is one forum, and I think there are 104 countries which are signatory to it. I think on patent quality, I think publicity and publication of data is probably going to be a key determination of the patent quality, and I think that is an area where as much publicity is done, the better would be the patent quality, because then the filer knows what are the patents which are already granted. And I think there are some issues relating to publication of patents, and I think those issues will have to be addressed in due course.
Yes.
Africa region, and Nigeria is a country of interest. I would like to find out from India and Brazil, and particularly in Brazil, what kind of mechanism do you notice private sector firms that are investing in technology, foreign technologies, for example, U.S. technology, as they participate in transfer of technology, how do they protect themselves, or what sort of mechanism they put in place as the technology become obsolete, for example? You know, how do they manage that? I can see where in India, if India has moved away or they're moving into acquisition of technology by acquiring the firm, how they can, you know, balance that out. And if you could answer the question more in the context of economic development, a country like Nigeria, private sector development is something that, you know, the government is probably trying to put in place, and there are a lot of private firms, and in particular indigenous firms, who are, you know, forging relationships with U.S. companies, especially in the telecommunications and IT sector, to bring technology in the country, etc. But my observation as an investment banker is they have not even started to consider, you know, some of those risks and how to protect or manage them.
This is one of those difficult questions. Let me just say that I can answer you in general terms. Perhaps we could discuss this later, and I'll give you some information. In general terms, what we I have said in here that our patent authority, meaning the INPI, is working very closely with the SEBRAE, which is the Brazilian small and micro and small companies, meaning that, and this is a proactive work, meaning that INPI does not work as, let's say, a waiting for people to come to, meaning that they reach out to these institutions and has a program which includes financing for partnering with foreign companies, especially small and medium companies. And we've been doing this work towards the United States, meaning that we want to attract small and medium companies that have a technological quality, meaning in their products or in their processes, and that we want to attract that. So INPI is working with these Brazilian companies since the very beginning to have their, let me, to create more value in their negotiations with their foreign potential partners. But we can give you more specific information afterwards.
Thank you. yeah, like your hand. So.
I'm John McKay with the Wall Street Journal. I've been following
you
some
stand
of the.
Stand, and then people will be able to hear you. See you.
I've been following some of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce's efforts in all three of your countries, and they've had some initial successes in Brazil recently. One of the problems that intellectual property reform faces in your countries is that while the central government might have an incentive to bring in property protection, the localized provinces, in fact, have a disincentive to reform their intellectual property protection because they have cottage industries that rely largely on pirated goods or counterfeit goods. So the U.S. Chamber of Commerce has taken a novel approach, which is to show potentially lost domestic tax revenues in the different provinces. And with Brazil's permission, in the past couple of years, they've done some extensive surveying in Sao Paulo and Rio de Janeiro and showing upwards of $9 billion in lost tax revenues. And that's become really a sort of a new model for promoting intellectual property reform. So I wondered if the minister from Brazil could comment on that program and its success and how it might perhaps serve as a model for some other countries that are facing those same kinds of problems, especially in China, where something in on a national level reform might work, but it doesn't necessarily translate to the provinces.
Well, thank you for bringing this. As I said before, Brazil is working very closely with this new pattern of reaching out to the private sector. And as I mentioned before, we are working towards having, let's say, a balanced approach in all 27 states of Brazil. What I know is in São Paulo, in terms of enforcement, for instance, we have recently established a coordination between the intellectual property police and the INPI. They are so that this can have a more quick result in terms of enforcement. In the other states, we are trying to duplicate or replicate this experience, but this takes some time. As I said, this is a dynamic process that we are trying to implement in the whole country. And of course, it starts with the more developed regions and where the economic activity is more, let's say, apparent. So I could have all this information that you are mentioning here. And, of course, we are working, as I said, with other countries in South America and with Mercosur. So all these experiences have been shared with these other countries. But our main task, our main priority is to have this widespread all over Brazil, meaning that we want the less developed regions and less developed states in Brazil to adopt these kind of patterns and processes.
Thank you. Yes.
My name is Letícia Lewis, and I am with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. I have a question for you, Mr. Teixeira. You mentioned that enforcement should not be considered the only venue in terms of protecting IPR. Can you comment on any plans that the Brazilian government has or for the near future in terms of public awareness campaigns to educate the general population on why it would be so important to protect IPR? Because this, as you know, is a cultural issue in Brazil as it is in many other countries. And the private sector has been very involved with many different campaigns. And I was wondering if you're aware of any public awareness campaigns.
As you can see, there are many campaigns going on in Brazil, not all of them sponsored by the government. As I can tell, I can tell you that Motion Pictures Association of America and their partners in the phonographic industry, they are teaming up in Brazil in order to put their own campaign, which is most welcomed by Brazilian authorities. So that we have been, as those of you who are familiar with Brazil do know, that this has been a tremendous effort by Brazilians, not Brazilian only Brazilian government, but also Brazilian society. But we do realize, and it's the same in here, the same in other countries, that innovation, cultural creation, everything has to be, protected. So Brazilian artists, Brazilian, all that relates to copyrights, meaning that this is a priority that has been set by the Brazilian society. This is not a government only thing, you see. So this is now but of course, Brazil has 180 million. It's hard to talk about population between these two guys here, but 180. But in our case, it's difficult to deal with this thing. So in order to widespread the word and have this changing in culture, because let me be very candid, sometimes this goes against the human nature. People want to pay less, so it's other values must be taught, must be publicized, must be part of our system of education. What I can tell you is that in our education system, we are little by little including values specifically related to the cultural aspects of this question.
Perhaps one more question, I always hate to pick the last one. Yep, this side.
Good morning. My name is Steve Merrill. I'm with the STEP program of the National Academy of Sciences. And I'd like to ask another question on international cooperation. It seems to me to complement the emphasis we've placed on achieving roughly comparable intellectual property regimes around the world, we need to pay more attention to creating a international intellectual property regime. I was impressed by the figures from Brazil, for example, about the doubling of the budget and resources of the Intellectual Property Office, the tremendous increase in the number of applications and issuances. This is happening across the world and troubling all patent offices, including that of the United States. So my question is, how do we get progress on three things? One, improving the cooperation, the work sharing, increasing the work sharing among patent offices. making robust, more robust, the patent cooperation treaty, and finally getting movement in the substantive patent law harmonization negotiations in WIPO.
We could just start at the end, and then we'll just move this way. And
I think all the three steps that you've mentioned, they are crucial to the growth and evolution of the patent regime, the intellectual property regime around the world. The first issue you talked about was cooperation, and I think the patent cooperation treaty has moved some distance, but I think there is much more scope for further cooperation on that. But I still feel that in terms of sharing the workload, I think we can be assisted by by the IT revolution and the IT facilities we have, where the databases of different patent offices can be accessible to different offices in the world. And I think that is an issue probably which would require a degree of convergence between different patent offices than what we have at the moment. But I think from what I said earlier, apart from publicity and publication, I think access to data also is the next stage of that cooperation, and that would help both in terms of work sharing and also in terms of patent quality. So I would say that these two things would be crucial to further evolution of the intellectual property regimes around the world.
Well, I fully agree with what my colleague from India just said, and I just want to remind that all these three areas that you mentioned are being tackled in the WIPO. So meaning that the Brazilian delegation, the WIPO, Brazilian government, has been working very hard in these areas. I understand these are integral part of the WIPO agenda. So, and Brazilian agencies are not only INPI, but all other agencies are paying full attention to these areas. So, and again, we've been working with fellow countries and in our region to have a common position in this coordinating our positions in WIPO in order to improve cooperation in these two, three areas.
Thank you. Before I turn this back, I just want to thank our panelists for their insightful and very, very well-prepared comments and remarks. This is an issue I know we will all be discussing with each other for many years, and I want to thank all of you for being such attentive listeners.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. This worked out much better than I had hoped, when I had fairly high hopes, I have to say. One of the things you all know is that development is now part of the WIPO agenda and part of the agenda for discussions of intellectual property. And what I got from today's meeting is that while there are differences, there are also great areas of commonality. Too often, intellectual property and development are cast as opposing forces. And one of the things I think we heard is that while there's still areas of debate, there's a realization that there are some common goals, common principles, common values in regard to how intellectual property relates to innovation and development. And we need more discussions like this. I'm very grateful to Dr. Shapiro, to our three panelists, for their insightful comments and for really staying up here quite a long time and fielding a range of questions. So we hope to have another event. You know, WIPO will be looking at this again in June, and perhaps around that time or shortly after we'll convene again. And I thank you all for coming.
Thank you.